Hi, this is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Afternoon. This is Arthur Schwartz on Advocating for Justice on WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. And I, as I was listening in at the end of the last show, I heard some of the candidates who are running for local station board. And I know that everybody, we have this very unique structure at WBAI and in Pacifica, the Foundation, which is a network of five radio stations across the United States, where if you make a donation, you probably don't realize it, you become a member if you donate $25 or more. And as a member, you have a big say in how the station is run and how the whole network is run. And those of you who pay attention to those emails, and we have a 35% participation in member votes. Usually, you may be getting overwhelmed with the inundated number of requests you get to vote for somebody and vote on a bylaw proposal, etc. But it's just like in public elections. You have an opportunity to decide the direction of this radio station and of the foundation that it's a member of. We have stations in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, Los Angeles, Houston, Washington, D.C., and New York, and 200 affiliates around the country. And it's important to vote and pay attention. You really have a say in this rather unique, it's not only listener supported, but it's a listener run radio station. And the local station board is the way that local people that live in the area where the station is broadcasting can have a say both in programming and in staffing and in making complaints and in making suggestions. And so participate, it's important. And also while you're at it, it's very important to keep this station on the air by making a donation. We are only on the air because our listeners donate money. Pacifica raises about $11 to $12 million a year. It keeps the five radio stations running. It keeps this radio station running. Just think about the expense of doing one show an hour for every day, 365 days a year. That's 24 different programs. Most of the producers like me aren't paid for what they do, but our staff is paid, the rent is paid, the antenna needs to be paid, and it costs a lot of money. So if you can go online, there's a phone number, but I prefer to people to go online because then you can become a WBAI buddy and make your donation at WBAI.org. And if you become a WBAI buddy, that could obligate you to pay as little as $10 a month, and that $10 will help keep this show and lots of other shows on the air. So that being said, one of the hallmarks of my show, for those of you who've listened back for the last 4 years, is that I have people on the show who are activists, and I have people on the show who are running for political office, and I have people on the show who hold political office. And that's because I believe that those who are trying to affect social change in the United States need to both be active and on the streets and protesting and petitioning and marching and even pinning themselves to trees. And then we also have to run. But in order to make some of that change, we need elected officials in place who are going to pass the bills, oppose zoning proposals, et cetera, that we're fighting for. And it could be around climate change. It could be around criminal justice reform. It could be about voting rights. It could be around whatever issue people are protesting about. We need people to run for office. And we have another round of elections coming in New York City on November 2nd. Other than some amendments to the state constitution that are on the ballot in most parts of New York City. Somebody's got a mute with a kid in the background. Other than these five constitutional amendments, which we should talk about before November 2nd, there aren't a lot of very exciting races on the ballot. There's an interesting one in Queens where a Democrat is challenging one of the two, I think, Republicans in the whole New York City Council. But there is an interesting race on the Lower East Side of Manhattan the sitting city council member, Carlina Rivera, who was once the darling of progressives in the area, has become less than the darling of progressives in the area. And the issue we're going to talk about, both that campaign, we're going to talk to Allie Ryan, who is a candidate who's actually running against Carlina. And we're going to talk about the fight over East River Park, which has been escalating in the last week with a bunch of people chaining themselves to trees around City Hall. So our first guest this afternoon is Allie Ryan. Welcome, Allie.
Thank you, Arthur. It's good to be here today.
So, Allie, tell people that are listening to the show, where are you running and who are you running against?
Okay, so I'm running for City Council District 2 as an independent. The name of my party is the Neighborhood Party, and because I want to represent the people, the residents who live here. And our district for District 2 covers the Lower East Side, going all the way down to Grand Street and below, a little bit below ground, to Vladeck Housing. It goes up to 35th Street, covering between First Avenue and Fifth Avenue. So it covers the neighborhoods of the Lower East Side, East Village, NoHo, Union Square, Gramercy Park, Rose Hill, Kipps Bay, and Murray Hill.
Pretty big area.
Yes, and it's a very diverse area. I've found, not just from living here, but also because of campaigning, talking to local residents, that like below 14th Street, everybody's concerned about saving East River Park, whereas above 14th Street, people are more concerned about quality of life issues. But as the looming partial closure of East River Park becomes reality, people below 14th Street are now becoming aware of quality of life issues and the awareness that the city has not prepared our neighborhoods for that closure and having more people in our neighborhoods.
So would it be fair to say that the thing that spurred you to run is the closure of East River Park?
Oh, most definitely. I testified at City Planning Commission hearing and City Council hearing during the land review process against the East Side Coastal Resiliency Project, also known as ESCR. And I was surprised, if not shocked, that our current council member voted in favor of the plan because at each of those hearings, over 100 people testified against it. And it was very clear to me that people wanted, they wanted the community-led plan. They wanted to preserve the park. They didn't want all the construction or deconstruction that's going to take, that will take place. And so for me, when I chose to run, it was like, I want to save my park, which is everybody's park. And, but I also wanted a council member who represented and listened to the residents of the community, which I didn't feel like had happened in that issue as well as other land use issues.
So let's for people that don't hang out on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, where is East River Park?
Okay, so East River Park starts around 25th Street in an area called Asher Levy Park. And so, and then it goes all the way down to Montgomery Street near Basketball City and where the Van Gogh exhibit was this summer. And it's defined by the river or the East River. And then internally in the island of Manhattan, it's defined by the primarily by the FDR. So for residents, we have to cross like bridges to get into the park. And so it is, you definitely are making a commitment to go into the park. But part of what I like about the park is that there is a bike path that connects our neighborhoods to uptown and also going downtown to like Battery Park. And you just, that can't be, in my opinion, it's very difficult to replace such a transportation connector.
And how long has East River Park been around?
For 80 years. It was actually a WPA project, a Works Public Administration, in the 1930s. And it opened to the public in 1939.
And so what is the plan? Because again, if you're not on the Lower East Side, you may not know about it unless you were around City Hall this week. what's going on? What are we talking about in destroying the park? And I'll just have to say for listeners, I represent the East River Park Alliance in court around it, but I'm asking this because I have never talked about it on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. What is this no, about? It's a really good question because I've had this question recently, especially by residents about 14th Street. It's like, it sounds like, oh, it's supposed to be flood protection. It sounds like a good plan, but actually what the current plan is, it's to demolish a 60-acre park and cut or chop down 1,000 trees and to demolish historical field houses and buildings from the 1930s, and then to bring in 1 million square feet of infill, which the source has not been disclosed to the public, and then put a new park on top of it. So what the, and so then the trees that will come in will be new trees, which I like to call pencil thin trees. And so cutting down 1,000 mature trees that is hard to put your arms around, it doesn't make sense to me personally. But with this current plan, it's basically it's turning the park into a flood wall and to protect our neighborhoods from rising sea levels. But the reality that we've seen even as recent as this summer with Hurricane Ida and Hurricane Henri, that there are other forms of climate change that can impact our neighborhoods, such as the torrential downpours. And so the water can come from below as well. And in this, for me personally, looking at this plan, I disagreed with it because at the time, and it did not address a curve from 14th Street to 18th Street that where flooding, where it does get flooded, and it's property owned by the Department of Transportation. And city council public hearing, the commissioner for public transportation acknowledged that they hadn't thought about how to handle that curve. And then secondly, there are underground streams flowing under the Lower East Side, because the Lower East Side was actually at one time marshland that has been built up by landfill. And to me, we need to address those streams as well. And so it's just not a, like, in my opinion, it's a disastrous plan. Like the thought of cutting down 1,000 trees, I don't know who the people in the room were to agree with that being a good idea. It doesn't sound like a good idea, because ultimately it affects more than just our neighborhoods with air quality, as well as just like oxygen is part of air quality.
This plan arose, my understanding is this is money that the federal government allocated to respond to Hurricane Sandy, which was now almost nine years to the day. It was on right before Halloween in 2012.
Where
the flooding from the sea rise during that storm went all the way over to First Avenue, which, for those of you who don't know the Lower East Side, that means it passed Avenue D and C and B and A and over to First Avenue. It was a pretty bad, the water was, went up 10, 12 feet, went over the seawall, and it did it on the west side too, by the way. No one's raising Hudson River Park, demolishing Hudson River Park and putting 10 feet of landfill on it. Don't we need a protection? Doesn't the area need some sort of barrier against storms like Hurricane Sandy?
Yes, we do. And I live in the floodplain as well. My first floor neighbors lost everything, including storefronts, because the floodwaters came up to their doorknobs. And so I do support flood protection for the area, but I support a modified version of the community-led plan, which predates the current plan. And the community spent 4 years coming up with this plan, maybe an imperfect plan, but it's, in my opinion, like creating a berm, which is basically like a soft earthen hill along the FDR, and then allowing the actual park itself to be used as a sponge, so the waters come in and go out or recede. To me, that sounded like a better plan. And also, like, I know at that time it was like rebuild by design competition program during the Obama administration had presented this plan. And part of it was also to, one component in the plan that I advocate for is to put like turn the FDR into a tunnel, and that you're covering it with like an earth top, so to speak, which to me sounds beneficial for the community as well. But I think that one thing I would like to add, the federal tax dollars that were given, it was actually $338 million. And it was given for, it was called the U, and that the East River Park portion was the first phase of the U, because it's supposed to wrap around Battery Park and lower Manhattan, as well as on the west side. And so it's supposed to be divided between those three projects. And the original community-led project was supposed to cost $770 million. And the current project was to ask, the current project now costs, originally it was supposed to cost $1.45 billion. And now with add-ons and just construction costs, it's gone up to almost $2 billion.
So This is Arthur Schwartz on Advocating for Justice on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City and WBAI.org. We're talking to Allie Ryan, who's running for city council on November 2nd in the second city council district, which is stretches from the Lower East Side to Gramercy Park, basically, and all the way as far west as Fifth Avenue. Allie, besides... you're running against Carlina Rivera. Besides East River Park, what is that the only reason you're running against Carlina? I mean, Carlina, you know, she's now, this is her her sec. She just got reelect. She won the Democratic primary, 70-30. It's her second term. She's a rising star in the city council. Some people speak of her as a potential speaker of the city council, although I hear that that sort of receded. What other reasons are you running against her?
I'm running against her because to me, East River Park is just one example of how she's not putting the community first. I think legislation that she is sponsored or co-sponsored has adversely affected the residents of our district. So for me, like, for example, she sponsored the legislation for open restaurants to make it permanent. And as I witnessed at the Community Board 3 public hearing on the restaurant sheds in July, people in our community are angry about it because it has reduced quality of life issues such as noise and rats, increase of rats, increase of trash, and also loss of parking spots as well. But it doesn't seem like she's putting the community first in that regard. Arthur, I can't hear you.
Sorry, I was just calling our next guest to make sure she was ready to go. Talk about the open restaurants question. Some people think, oh, this is a wonderful thing. It's going to help the restaurants get back into business. What's your problem with it?
Well, I live across the street from two restaurant sheds that take up the length of five parking spots. So what a lot of the concerns you hear about the restaurants, the open restaurant program and the outdoor dining, I'm experiencing firsthand. So keeping that in mind that I have firsthand experiences, my problem is actually starts with the city, that they're not like, they need to be held accountable because they're actually contributing to some of the problems we're experiencing as residents, such as they're only cleaning the streets once a week. They're not enforcing alternate side parking, and those specifically like increase the trash, increases the rats population, and increases the smells. I do think if the city wants to go forward with this program, they need to address those issues first before trying to make the program permanent. I do think, you know, at one time when this program was initiated, I definitely supported it. Then I think as time has gone by, you know, restaurants are able to seat indoors at 100% capacity. But I think for me, part of the problem is like we need making DOT in charge of the program is problematic. Like for me, I would like the approval to go back to the community boards because it's not like Lower Manhattan was built before cars. So we have narrower streets than what you will find in Queens or in the outer boroughs. So problems that we experience here in District 2, you don't necessarily experience in other parts of the city. So if you're having the community boards actively involved in the program, it becomes catered to like your block, like putting residents first. But I also will add, like in our neighborhood, there is a problem, and I think that has not publicly been discussed about is that landlords in our neighborhood and I think you probably find this in your neighborhood too, they will warehouse empty storefronts, and because they want to rent their storefront at a higher rate that a restaurant will pay versus a small mom and pop business. And I think, and so in our neighborhood, I believe there's like over 1,000 restaurant sheds. And because we have such a high number of restaurants per block. And so we need, as a city government, we need to address how to I think that's a problem that needs to be addressed as well.
So, Allie, we're running out of time. And I assume Carlina Rivera is not doing what you think she ought to do about this program.
Well, she's been silent about it of recent. I mean, she sponsored the legislation. So I imagine, so to me, she's probably supportive of what, of the zoning text amendment that's going through ULURP right now. And, but so I don't know what she thinks about how, like, in dealing with the quality of life issues that have come out of this program.
So, Allie, we've run out of time. I'm going to just ask you if you could tell people, if they want to know more about your campaign, how do they get in touch with you?
Okay.
What's your website address?
Okay. My website address is AllieRyan2021.nyc. So it's AllieRyan2021.nyc.
Thank you so much, Allie. Good luck. People vote on November 2nd. Those of you on the Lower East Side, you just look. There are three candidates, a Democrat and Allie on the Neighborhood Party and another candidate. It's important to vote. And if you want to save East River Park, it's important to do that. So thank you so much. Before our next guest, Catherine Freed, who has joined us, I'm going to play a little clip from a rally that occurred on April 19th, where I spoke, and we're going to just play a piece of what I said at that rally. I rarely play my own speeches, but here comes.
And one night, I was dating a young woman, and we came over to East River Park after a snowstorm, and we lied down in the snow and looked up at the trees and made snow angels. I had never done that in my whole life, even though I grew up in the Bronx, right? And that's where I fell in love with my wife, all right? I proposed to her on Pier 40 on the other side of town, but we fell in love here in East River Park making snow angels. So this park has a special meaning to me, and I appreciate it. And I want to talk about some of my experiences on both sides of town with parks. Back in 1995, there was a pier at the end of Houston Street that was just full of cars and trucks and buses. And I had a seven-year-old kid at the time who was playing Little League on asphalt. That's why he played on asphalt, right? And we saw this pier and we said, wow, we could build a field here. And we went up to the governor's office, Governor Pataki, and they said, yeah, if you raise, you know, the money, we'll give you a piece of the pier and you could build a pier, you could build a field. And then we started raising money, we created a nonprofit, and then one day we heard a rumor that the next day they were going to sign a lease to turn the whole thing into a truck and bus parking lot for the next 4 years. So we went to court, 9 o'clock at night, the night before the lease, and a judge issued, we said we had a contract. It was off the wall lawsuit. We said we had a contract, and the judge issued an injunction. And then I learned about a lot of environmental laws, and we beat the state. And now it's one of the most magnificent ball field centers in Manhattan for kids from all over the city.
We want an injunction.
About 10 years later, Hudson River Park Trust wanted to make some money off the pier. So they floated a plan, and they were about to adopt a plan that related that wonderful, wonderful contributor to the economic well-being of billionaires in this city. Related, it's a big development company. They wanted to build a whole bunch of buildings, and they said they'd put the field on the top. And 1,500 parents showed up at a community board meeting. And guess what happened to Related's plan? It went away. It went away. So you can win. These fights are winnable. They are winnable. And you have some amazing people leading your fight. You know, Pat Arnau and Charles Grizel. I'm sorry if I leave people out. You know, just astounding, never-ending, pounding away every day. Arthur, what are we doing today? We are in court on a lawsuit about alienation. There's a concept in New York law that parkland cannot be alienated, meaning destroyed, for some non-park purpose without a vote of the state legislature. But it's not just a vote. It's a vote on a bill which sets limits. It says it must be done between this year and this year. It must include this, this, and this in the plan. And the city has not wanted to go to the state legislature for an alienation vote. And why is that? Because they have something else in mind. Besides the fact that they have in mind that they're going to take forever, you know, this ridiculous plan of, you know, I've heard this phrase, we're going to destroy it to save it. I think that's what we did in Vietnam, right? Is that what we did in Afghanistan? We destroyed it to save it? Well, they want to do the same thing right here in East River Park. We'll destroy it to save it. Well, that's
bullshit.
Right? But they don't, but they have something in mind. So they don't want the state legislature to sit on top of them. They don't want the assembly person from over here, Harvey Epstein, who's a great friend of this park. They don't want him sitting on top of this plan. They want freedom to do that. So that after they finally realized that they weren't going to get away with a vote in the state legislature, they came up with this new ridiculous idea of destroying the park to save it by raising it 8 feet in the air and cutting down every one of these trees, including the one that I fell in love with my wife under. And I don't want them to do that. It's something that's very close to me. That was 20 years ago. We're still married, right? Two wonderful kids. So we will keep on fighting. We're going to be in court asking the appellate division. We lost the first round. We're going to ask the appellate division in the next week to issue a stay against the construction that they, the mayor, I think, released a statement saying they were going to start sometime later this year. I believe that's what he said. We don't know exactly when that is. Which, as you know, is another code word for this is going to take 10 years before they ever get back to planting saplings where these magnificent trees are. So you guys are great. You have to rise and resist. Keep up the fight. And I'm with you all the way. And by the way, I handed out a flyer to people. I am running for city council, not here. I'm running on the west side where Corey Johnson, the friend, the greatest friend developers ever had, is the current city council member. Right? I am running to replace him in the city council. I would love your support. My website is www.arthur4nyc.com. I need the support of people here. You know, I'm running against the establishment.
So that was a speech I gave back in April. Construction still hasn't started, thank God. And the fight goes on. And one of the new allies, I mean, she may have been an ally in her heart, and now she's an ally in the flesh, is Catherine Freed, who is going to join us in a minute. This is Arthur Schwartz on Advocating for Justice on WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Catherine, welcome to Advocating for Justice.
Thank you.
It's so nice to be able to have you on the air. Catherine and I have known each other. She's been politically active in Democratic Party politics 20 years before I was. She started in her 20s. I think she told me last night she ran for assembly at 23. A little precocious. Catherine was the Democratic district leader in Soho and South Village for many years. I don't know how many years. She was a city council person for about 10 years. She got term limited out. Then she became a judge. I actually remember when she ran for judge and she said, aren't you glad I'm going to be a judge? You won't have to deal with me anymore. But sure enough, my office wound up having cases in front of her all the time. And Catherine, along with other judges who hit the mandatory retirement age in under the New York State Constitution, but who used to look forward to 1 year at a time recertifications, got unceremoniously dumped back last October by the chief judge, who was complaining about a lack of money in the court system. And so Catherine has Catherine, who started her career as a tenant lawyer, an election lawyer, you know, has returned to the private world, and she is, you know, been appearing regularly at rallies and demonstrations and speaking at public hearings as a public citizen. And when I asked folks at the East River Park Alliance, who's a good person to have on the air about this show, they said, Catherine. So, welcome. So, Catherine, first, just tell us, what are you up to these days?
Yeah, I think I'm just going back to being a community rabble rouser again, back to my roots. Yeah, basically, I've been, as you said, I've been working against this horrible, horrible proposal to really just clear cut all of East River Park, and I've been working with those groups. I've been working with the groups who are opposed to the what's called the upzoning of Soho, NoHo, and Chinatown, which will kind of probably result in the Times Square southing of that area, and a little bit with the Elizabeth Street Gardens, and just kind of, you know, getting my feet wet back into community projects and a little bit of politicking. I was out this morning campaigning, handing out flyers for Chris Marte in front of Independence Plaza, where I lived for almost 30 years. So I saw a lot of old friends in front of the park that I helped create, Washington Market Park.
And so tell us what's give us the, you know, you were a lawyer, you are a lawyer, you were a city council member. What's your perspective on East River Park, and why is it so awful?
Well, first, I guess we can thank the de Blasio administration. But what is particularly appalling to me is the fact that we don't have these city council members out there fighting for the community. They seem to be accepting clear cutting the park, doing away with all the trees, and not to mention, I mean, it's just a horrible plan. I mean, they're going to dump all this fill on the park, 8 feet of it above what used to be trees and playing fields and bumblebees, which will probably be wiped out. But I don't know why they're not fighting harder for the neighborhood. I mean, the neighborhood met for 4 years with the mayor's office, and they had come up with a proposal. I mean, it didn't save all of the park, but it saved a lot of the park. It made it easier to get into the park. It would have preserved all the various playing fields. And instead, after 4 years of meeting with the city, where they assumed the city was supporting this plan, kind of in secret, the mayor's office met with the various agencies, and they came up, and their privately hired developer firms, landscaping firms and construction firms, and they came up with this proposal to decimate the park, drop 4 feet of fill on top of it, and then put back not all but some of the uses. But they're also putting back a lot of asphalt and concrete, and believe it or not, astroturf. So I don't understand why the city council isn't, and especially the local council members, are not fighting harder for this. Why would you accept anything else? How can you accept the idea of paying for a ferry to go to Governor's Island as mitigation for not having playing fields, or telling the kids that they can go to Randall's Island and use that? I mean, these kids can't use that. So I'm just appalled. And I did see the tape of Cory Johnson saying he didn't know anything about it, and that the local council members had to call for a hearing. But yet, just last week, the city council passed a citywide resiliency study, wouldn't you at least think that they would want this part of the resiliency plan to mesh with the rest? And wouldn't you think they'd want to have another hearing on that and talk about how it's going to mesh? And they're not even doing that. So when you ask me what I think about the city council, I don't know why they're walking away from the community. Back in my days, we fought very, very hard for the community. It's how we got all the parks that we got.
So let me ask, one of the things that I don't understand about this plan is basically turning the park into a wall, right?
Right.
And, but it only goes from like 14th Street to Montgomery Street, which for people that don't know where Montgomery Street, it's around the Williamsburg Bridge.
You know where the amphitheater is in Corlears Hook? It's below that.
So if the East River rises like it did during Hurricane Sandy, doesn't it just go around the wall and still flood?
Well, Lower Manhattan? One of the ridiculous parts of this plan, I use the term advisedly, is that Pier 42 is down there, and they're not talking about putting a wall by Pier 42 or raising that. So of course it's going to go around it. They're both north and south of this particular area. I think it's called phase one of the resiliency plan. There are problems. There's a FEMA project north of us, which they don't seem to be meshing with. And then there are these areas south of us where they aren't going to raise it. So of course the water's just going to come around it. And please understand that they're doing all this to prevent the rising ocean levels and to prevent storm surges, but they have done absolutely nothing about landmark or devastating rainfall. So in August and September, twice we broke records. This entire project that's going to kill the park does nothing to stop the results of rainfall like that. Even though right now it looks like this plan was supposed to be a $1.45 billion, because it's been delayed, it's probably closer to $2 billion now. And it does nothing to protect us from heavy rainfall.
Of that $2 billion, how much of it comes out of the city?
Well, most of it's going to have to, because there was a HUD grant for, I think, $335 million. So the rest of it's got to come out of the city. I mean, my projection, quite frankly, is that what's going to happen. Well, first you should understand that the contracts to the company that's going to be doing all of this, decimating the park and everything, the construction, is kind of a hobbled together company. They took a bunch of different companies who have never done this kind of thing before, put them together, and they put in their bid. The city had to try 5 times to get any companies to bid on this project. They finally got 2. They got this hobbled together company, and then they got Tully Construction. Now, you've probably seen trucks and things from Tully Construction. They've been hired by the city to do a lot of things, and they do a lot of large-scale construction. But this, I think it's IPC Corporation, has never done anything like this. So my projection, quite frankly, is that they'll get started. They'll cut all the trees down. They'll tear up all the green space. They'll tear up all the playing fields, the softball fields, the soccer fields, the tennis fields. And I think a few years ago, the city put $3 million into the track that's in East River Park. It's one of the last remaining one in the city where people can actually go and run on it for free. And it's a real track with real footing. And all that's going to be torn up. And then once there's nothing out there but a big mud field, I think the company's going to default and walk away from it. I mean, I could be wrong, so we're likely to be left with the mud field out there for years and years, and they have not talked to us or told us what kind of interim flood protection will be out there. As far as we know, there won't be any. It's one of the reasons we're trying to get a new more transparent and up-to-date environmental impact statements. Because there are so many questions, even the borough president's office had about 30 questions saying that the environmental impact statement does not answer. The statement was done, the EIS was done before COVID, before Ida, before congestion pricing. So it's very out of date and it may not be close to reality. And as I said, I think this company is going to default.
So question about, so we're, it's now, they were originally supposed to start, I brought my lawsuit for East River Park Alliance in 2019.
Right.
And everything moved slowly in 2020. It was, the construction was supposed to start in March 2020.
Yeah. Right.
Still hasn't started, which I think, as I said in my speech, gives you a sense of their five-year park plan probably means 10 years of have there being no park. But why, so here it is, Bill de Blasio has, it's October 9th, so November, December, January. He has less than 3 months to go.
Right.
Why, with all the controversy around this, do you think he's pushing it? To why not wait, let Eric Adams reconsider it?
That's what he should do, the same way with the Soho project. I don't know. He seems to be trying to push through a lot of things. The only thing I can assume is payback for somebody for doing something. That's only my speculation. There is no reason to be pushing this at this point, especially as I said, there's a brand new resiliency plan that was just passed by the city council. I mean, it's crazy. In the new plan, among other things, environmental things, they're talking about paying building owners to plant trees on the roof. And here they are killing 1,000 mature, healthy trees. It's insane. So why is he pushing it? I couldn't say for sure, but I would suggest that someone take a close look at the contracts and who got jobs where.
This is for Station ID. This is Arthur Schwartz on Advocating for Justice, 99.5 FM, WBAI, and WBAI.org. And we're talking to Catherine Freed, former judge, former city council person, ongoing activist. So, Catherine, you just one last question about Hudson River Park. So your old district, and I think you probably still live downtown, your old district...
I live just two blocks in from the park.
The next district over, and which includes Lower Manhattan, the financial district, the World Financial Center, the World Trade Center, et cetera, et cetera.
Seaport.
That area, my recollection is there was pretty bad flooding down there after Hurricane Sandy. In fact, my kids went to school down there and they couldn't go for a month.
Right.
Are they raising a wall around Lower Manhattan?
No. In fact, what they're doing to our park, you know, the East River Park just out from, as I said, I live on Grand Street, so I'm right in the middle of it. That wall that they're building to stop the flooding, they're not doing at Battery Park, for instance. They're going to allow Battery Park to flood. And the reason they said they're doing that is because they said they can't move the monuments. So they are building a wall inboard and the park will flood and then it will drain, which would be great if they did that here because we could put the wall up after the park and then East River Park could flood and then drain. After Superstorm Sandy, the park was drained in 2 days. After Ida, just in September, the park was drained in 1 day. So it's the whole plan is inconsistent. Our section doesn't mesh with the sections below it or above it. So the whole thing is kind of smarmy as to why they're pushing it now. It really should be up to Eric Adams.
So you mentioned the Soho NoHo. I want to get into that. There's a rezoning plan, which is another parting shot that
absolutely
De Blasio was taking at Lower Manhattan. What is that about?
Yeah, before we leave East River, I just want to say, Arthur, thank you for all the work you've done on this, because it was terrific that you went and represented us. So we appreciate
you. You're welcome.
Soho, the Soho, NoHo, and Chinatown project upzoning is very much like this one. The same thing, where the mayor's office, the city planning, met with the community for a number of years. They thought, you know, the community made a number of proposals because just like here, the community isn't saying don't do anything. They're willing to work with it. They recognize that things have to be done. It's just you don't have to destroy things. And the same thing in Soho. After hearing from the community, the city turned around and made a proposal with basically none of the community's recommendations or requests. And it's exactly the same thing. It's in that case, it's an obvious giveaway to big real estate, because it allows much larger commercial spaces. It changes the height limitations, the FAR, the floor area ratio, to allow much larger buildings to be made. It also allows demolition of a lot of buildings. And interestingly, and it allows even putting several stories on top of the old cast iron buildings that are in the heart of Soho and NoHo, which have national landmark status as well as city and state. And it's a giveaway to developers, even though it's being there. The city is saying that it will make more affordable housing and it will increase diversity. The only problem is in that community board, I think affordable housing is the median income is something like $162,000 a year, which I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound affordable to me. And they kind of cobbled these blocks of Chinatown along in the project and a corridor just east of NoHo. And those buildings in that area are probably really at risk of being demolished. And those buildings are where it's largely Chinatown and it's largely Latinos north in the area east of NoHo. So the diversity in the district is mostly coming from those areas. So they will probably, they'll probably clear cut those buildings just like they're doing to the trees. A lot of them will be demolished and they will build brand new, very expensive apartments or condos, co-ops. And they may not even be forced to put any affordable housing into the buildings, because I think you have to be higher than, I'm not going to remember the exact amounts, but if you don't build residential housing above a certain square footage, you don't have to put in any affordable housing. And if you put in commercial, especially if you put commercial on the first or second floors, you will not have to put in any affordable housing. So there's a disincentive to build affordable housing. More than likely, what you will end up doing is getting rid of any diversity in the area at all and getting rid of any lower or middle income or rent stabilized tenants.
So you're basically saying that in the name of affordable housing, this rezoning plan is going to allow more luxury housing to be built.
Exactly. So the whole area will be more upscale, more lack of diversity, and absolutely no lower moderate income.
Now, again, talking about the city council, the outgoing city council, the incoming city council member in your old district, who we're out campaigning for this morning, Chris Martin, I hope I'm going to have him on soon. He's against the plan, right?
Absolutely. That's why I was out campaigning for him. Otherwise, I would have supported him.
And
he's against the East River Park development. He's against what's going on in Elizabeth Street Garden. He's a good guy.
And has the plan gone through the city council or is it still pending?
It's gone before the it's gone before the
City Planning Commission.
City Planning Commission.
But it's still waiting for a vote at the city council.
Well, let's see. I think the city council members, certainly it's Margaret Chinzel's district. She's in favor of it. Chris will be opposed to it. I don't know if it even has to go before the city council.
No, I think rezoning has to go before the city council. But so the and Chris Marte is going to replace Margaret Chin. And do you get a sense they're going to try to push this through also before the end of Margaret's term and the end of de Blasio's term?
Yes, I do.
I have 30 seconds left. So what's been going on at City Hall? What's going on with the chaining around the trees?
Well, those are the East River Park activists, and we haven't been getting a response, particularly from Corey Johnson, who's the current speaker. And we've been trying to push as hard as possible in any way we can, and getting the, and this gets us visibility, to try and push for a new hearing and a transparent hearing. And they did catch Corey last week. And Corey essentially said he didn't know anything about it. He didn't know anything about the park asking for a new hearing, and basically said it has to be asked for by the affected council members, the three council members who are supporting it. And of course, they haven't asked for it. But on the other hand, you have a committee on resiliency and waterfront and environmental protection committee, and they could ask for it. And in fact, the chair of the resiliency committee, Brenna, says that he has asked for it. So we're pushing as hard as we can to get that hearing.
Right. So thank you so much, Catherine. If people want to know more, the East River Park Alliance has a website. If you just Google East River Park Alliance, you'll come to it. It's full of information, schedules, events, rallies, protests, tree training. If you want to chain yourself around a tree.
In fact, they're out in East River Park today doing a, I don't want to say demonstration, that's an old word, but they're meeting people as they come in and showing people what would happen if the entrances were all blocked off, and then they're handing out information about it. So if you're near the park, go support them.
Thank you so much, Catherine. And we're going to see everybody next week. I have my special guest is going to be India Walton, who's running for mayor of Buffalo. She's a Democratic nominee running against a write-in candidate who's the current mayor of Buffalo, who is being supported by the Democratic Party establishment against her, even though she won the primary. India is going to be on. She's an amazing young woman, and I hope everyone will join us next week, and we're going to go off the air with Patti Smith singing People Got the Power.
Good afternoon. You're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. Advocating for Justice with Arthur Schwartz came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio WBAI in New York. Coming up at 1 o'clock is Talk Out of School. Please stay tuned.
A station dedicated to and sponsored by its listeners. From 1960 to present day, WBAI has been promoting an innovative perspective of news, public affairs, music, arts, health, and science. In order to provide a truly unique voice to New York City, WBAI receives its financial assistance from listeners like you. To help WBAI continue this tradition, you can become a BAI buddy by giving a generous monthly donation of as little as $10. It's a safe, secure, and simple way to support your local station. To become a BAI buddy, go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org.
I'm Roland Brooks. You are listening to WBAI New York.